I am going to, I want to open with this. This is out of a little book called To Bless the Space Between Us, and it's by John O'Donohue. For those of you that aren't familiar with him, he's an Irish author who has since passed, but he's written some beautiful books, and no matter what he writes, it just seems to be incredibly poetic. And these were just blessings, and this one was the blessing for presence. Awaken to the mystery of being here and enter the quiet immensity of your own presence. Have joy and peace in the temple of your senses. Receive encouragement when new frontiers beckon. Respond to the call of your gift and the courage to follow its path. Let the flame of anger free you of all falsity. And may warmth of heart keep your presence aflame. May anxiety never linger about you. May your outer dignity mirror an inner dignity of soul. Take time to celebrate the quiet miracles that seek no attention. Be consoled in the secret symmetry of your soul. And may you experience each day as a sacred gift woven around the heart of wonder. From the beginning, not just to go, okay, we're starting now. And people were letting me know afterwards, you left me alone with my mind for 15 minutes, not knowing what to do with it. So I forgot that maybe some teaching was important and part of that. So for those of you that have heard this before, sometimes it's repetition is helpful. And for those that haven't, there's several different tricks or ways that you can go about silencing the mind and getting to that quiet place. One of them is to just pay real big attention on your breathing. Get all focused on your breathing. And I do what I call ride my breath. So as I'm inhaling, and women in particular, when you're inhaling, don't breathe just up here. Breathe down here into your belly. You know, think of Buddha belly. And I want you to pay attention to how it feels for the abdomen to rise and fall as you inhale and exhale. And as you do, when you're inhaling, you might even use the word inhale in your mind. And as you exhale, just say exhale in your mind. And practice that for a little bit. If you can't seem to quiet the noise, the ego's voice up there chattering away, reminding you of the bill you didn't pay and the person you forgot to call back and what you didn't get at the grocery store, go to your senses. And some people will start with an open eye meditation. So what you do with that is you leave your eyes open, and what you're doing is kind of scanning your environment. And you're just looking at color, depth, shape, size, light and shadow. Just notice it. If your mind starts labeling and putting names on it, or if you go, oh, well, that doesn't match and that needs to be cleaned, then that's not where we want to be. So close your eyes and go to your sense of hearing. And pay attention that when you first get quiet and focus on your hearing, you're going to hear the sound that right now we're not paying much attention to because I'm talking. So my voice is the predominant sound. But when there's silence, you're going to hear a level of sound first. And as you are able to get quieter, you're going to hear a whole nother level of sound. And just really work at staying with your breath and focusing on what you're hearing, and just notice it. So if somebody all of a sudden talks loud out in the hallway, just notice it and pull your attention back. Big old car and its big loud engine and no mufflers out there in the parking lot, just notice it. Bring your attention back so that no matter what happens, the goal is, or the idea is that those things don't disturb what you're trying to do. you incorporate them in and you just notice it. You don't push it away, because then you're resisting. Like, I've been resisting the sound equipment stuff for the last hour and a half. We don't want to go there. That's not the goal. The goal is to be in non-resistance and non-attachment and non-judgment, so that it's just a real simple place of being and not doing. And for us, especially in Western culture, that's really tough. We're raised to be doing something. You know, always doing, doing. We've really become human doings. If that doesn't work, pretend you're a cat sitting in a mouse hole waiting for the mouse to come out. Only you're waiting for the next thought. Get real focused on waiting for that next thought. And that one really works. The only difficulty with that one is that you have to stay really fixed on the idea of waiting for the next thought. So if you notice you're wandering off and the thoughts come back up, just go back to that waiting for the next thought to come up. Because as soon as you go there, you're in present moment and you're not going to hear any chatter. So, okay. So we're going to do a 15-minute silent meditation. You're welcome to sit on the floor, go anywhere in the room you want, be as comfortable as you want to be. And I'm going to use the singing bowl. This is a quartz crystal bowl attuned to the crown chakra, which is right here. And I will use it to start us. And then when you hear it again, it'll be the end of our 15 minutes. Boy, did I need that. I don't know about you guys, but that really helped. What's really important to know about meditation is there's no right or wrong way to do it. So it's about practice. It's, you know, if you think about learning how to, you know, when I learned how to play piano, and I remember the teacher asking me what I wanted to learn how to play, and believe it or not, I was a strange 10-year-old. I wanted to learn how to play Moonlight Sonata by Beethoven. And, of course, before I could even begin to go there, I had to learn a whole lot of other stuff, and it was practice every day, and then eventually I did get to that piece of music, and even then, it was lots of mistakes, tons of mistakes. I had a student in another part of the country email me yesterday and basically say, I'm not getting this right, I keep screwing it up, I'm making a mess of everything. And, you know, what I told her was, you have no idea how really awesome you're doing. And that what is going to happen is we're going to make mistakes. It's part of the deal. So if you think you have to do this perfect or that you are doing it perfect, you're in for a really rude awakening at some point, because there's no truth to that. You cannot do this perfect. There is no perfect. I really have come to believe that. Then what happens is the little ego that is driving that is of the belief that if I do this perfect, I have control. And if I have control, then I've got safety and security. And that's a big illusion. So just know that. Safety and security is a big illusion. And I've talked a lot about that in here, so I don't want to go into that today. But about the meditation practice, be willing to start at home. Set your phones or whatever you got that beeps, and do it for 2 minutes. Just 2 minutes. 3 minutes. And increase it by 30 seconds. So I do 15 minutes here because I'm trying to find that middle ground between people that are brand new at it and people that have been doing it for a long time. And so that's why I do the 15 minutes. But if you're new and you're wanting to learn and get the results of what this can give you, you should do it yourself. Because you are going to make mistakes. And with a lot of this stuff that I teach in here, I'm teaching human experience. We're spiritual beings having a human experience. And to think we're going to come down here and just do this perfect little, you know, I mean, really, how boring is that? So, that wouldn't be any fun either. All right. So tonight, what I got told in meditation, and I was still trying to understand some of this until today when I downloaded some stuff that was kind of interesting. And when I say downloaded, what I mean is I channel it. It comes through in my meditation, or I'll be doing something like washing the dishes, and I'll just get a flood of information. And it was identifying the restlessness and the urgency. And what I've really come to understand what the direction of that was supposed to be. And we may even have an idea of what that looks like, but we can't quite get a handle on it, or how do I go about creating that? But even I think that the urgency in the rest as a tribe of human beings on at that place, happening is that we're being called to really step up to the plate. In other words, really move into our heart centers and really get to that place where we don't have meltdowns when the recording equipment doesn't work, like I did. So, and, you know, and that's just a classic example. The difference for me today is that I can recognize it, I can be aware of it, and I don't beat myself up for it. I don't expect myself to be perfect just because I teach this. In fact, I know that I teach this because it's most what I need to learn, you know, so I'm really grateful that I get this opportunity. So what I would have you do is look into your lives just in the last, say, year or two, right up until now. Just take from now, go back a year or two. And do you think all there is? Is this what life's supposed to be? Is this it? Getting up and going to work every day? Is this it? And it may be that those kinds of questions you ask, or it may be the question, I want to contribute something. I want to be of service somehow, and I don't know how. I don't want to just rush off and go volunteer somewhere. I want it to really have meaning for me, and I want it to be meaningful what I give. So that in that restlessness, what happens is that I think it feeds the anxiety that's kind of already there, that most people have a tendency to be swirling around in most of the time, and to the point where they don't even know it anymore. And that's where a lot of our addictive behaviors come in. And when I'm talking addictive behaviors, I'm talking about all my hat's off to you if you did, 15 minutes of absolute silence up here. There's my example. Okay? So that what happens is that we feel exhausted. And at the same time, there's this constant adrenaline, this anxiety in the background that is playing all the time. And then we run off to doctors and people that give us prescriptions and tell us to do this and tell us to do that. And then we get on paths where we keep running around in circles, I think, looking for the quick fix. And if it doesn't stay within allopathic or Western medicine in terms of that quick fix, then we get off into the alternative medicines and we get off onto, you know, I mean, I know people that have been spiritually seeking for years. And when we have conversation, I end up going, and you've found anything, huh? You've tried all this stuff and you've had all these incredible experiences. And to me, it, I don't know why, but it always pops up, Wizard of Oz, is because it's all right here. We don't have to go to an ashram in India. We don't have to go on a pilgrimage to a mountaintop and pay homage to the holy man who's been meditating up there and forever to get to that place. Because it's in here. And I think that urgency that we feel, that restlessness, is a call from our spirit, hoping that we will step up to the plate and listen to it. It might be to identify what is your heart's desire. And I'm gonna screw some people's dreams up here, because heart's desire, when I say that, doesn't mean another person like the perfect soulmate lover. Okay, because I got that this week too. Well, if I'm wanting to have that perfect soulmate, wouldn't that be my bliss? No, another person cannot be your bliss. Your bliss is inside you. So it's finding out what gives you bliss, not in another person. Because now they've become your higher power. Last week, I think I talked to you about one of my spiritual teachers, what she had me do because of my addiction to a particular person, was I was to take his picture, put it on a chair, put that chair up on a table, and get down on my knees and bow to it. Because, in fact, I had made that person my higher power. I mean, that person basically, you know, as much as I didn't want to admit it, and I was a fairly independent person, you know, could, by an inaction or an action, I would be feeling happy or unhappy, disappointed or sad or upset or hurt or, you know, in some cases devastatingly crushed, you know, and it was all based on what I was listening to and believing up here. Okay, the ego going outside of itself. The ego, when I talk ego, I'm not talking Western psychology ego. I'm talking ego as in a separate entity that has built up enough energy and steam that it believes it can kill me and carry on. Yeah, and I have to keep reminding it, it needs the meat suit to travel. Okay, so if what you're looking for in your bliss is another person, then that's one of the things I would ask you to take through the questions, Byron Katie's work, and really question that, because that is never going to get you what you want. It will never fulfill that heart need, that call, that the urgency and restlessness will never really go away. What I'm talking about is that thing that you have done, and maybe you haven't done it since you were a kid, or you haven't experienced it since you were a kid. But what happened was, when you did it, there was no sense of time. And it just delighted you. And it lit you up. And it broke open even more imagination. And with more imagination, you explored more and investigated more. So it brings out that light side of the child archetype I talked about last week, that is the wonder and the innocence, the delight that is taken in just the simple thing of having another question to go search, and how exciting that was. That's when you know you're in bliss. That's bliss. Joseph Campbell talks about doors open for you where there were only walls. And I know that to be true for myself personally, as well as a whole lot of people that I've witnessed that happen for. People that thought they were broke and that they had to be tied to corporate America or tied to jobs that they couldn't stand because they had to bring home the paycheck, and only to find out that when they really stepped into what they enjoyed the most, all these doors started opening up. People started approaching them. Would you be interested in doing this? And, oh, we pay you for doing that, and blah, 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 blah. And then they turned it into a business. And they have a going concern, a company that's making lots of money. So, but the goal wasn't to make the money. The goal wasn't for the stuff. The only goal was, I'm doing this as long as it brings me joy. As long as it brings me happiness. As long as when I get into this and do this, I lose that sense of time. I'm happy like a kid again. And one of the things that I got this afternoon, and I wasn't sure the segue on this until just now, and that is Dr. Marshall Rosenberg, and you've heard me talk about him, teaches nonviolent communication. And one of his most radical concepts that a lot of people really buck, because the first thing that pops up is all the, yeah, but what if? And that is, what he says is, please do not do anything for me, and do not fulfill my requests, unless you can do it with the pure joy of a little child feeding a hungry duck. Do not do this thing for me if you're doing it out of coercion, out of guilt, out of shame, out of hoping for a reward, like I'll like you, out of fear of punishment. Oh, I don't want you mad at me. I don't want you to be disappointed in me, so I'll do this. Only do it if it brings you joy. And that, to me, is what that bliss is about. When I practice that, when I actually am able to go there and say no to my kids, for example, then I notice that the restlessness and that urgency banks back down. It gets quiet. And I think it's because my spirit is feeling like it's being heard, because I'm actually taking action that follows through with that. Now, in the last 3 days, culminating with the insanity of the sound equipment, yeah, not so much. Did I feel anxious, restless? Did I have a sense of urgency? Yeah, to the max. I had attachment. I had an attachment exactly to what I expected to happen and what I wanted to have happen. I had judgment. This is not a good thing. It's only going to be a good thing if it works. If it doesn't work, it's a bad thing. And I was in absolute resistance about what was happening with it. And yet, at the same time, in the back of my mind, I'm hearing this little voice going, how well is this working for you, Karen? Is it helping you be intuitive so that you'll kind of know naturally what the next step is? Because I can only come from that intuitive place when I am coming from non-resistance, non-judgment, and non-attachment. Easy? No way. Simple? Yes. It's very simple. It's this, our head, our mind, the voice of the ego, the thinking, whatever you want to call it, it's all the same thing to me, including unconsciousness, that prevents us from going there, that makes it difficult. I said to several people this week, everything is hard until you make up your mind to do it. And I know that's true. I've had experience after experience after experience with that to back that up. Everything in my life that I've done that, as I started out, I was deciding in my head and judging, this is going to be so hard. I don't know if I can do this. And, you know, but here it goes, right? The ego's already got me totally failed. It isn't going to work. And as soon as I decided, you know what, I don't care. I don't care if I fail. I don't care if this doesn't work out. I don't care if I end up making a fool of myself. I don't care. I'm going to step in and give it a listen. And once I make up my mind, all of a sudden, it's not taking a difficult. It's not so hard. And I think that's where concepts like Rosenberg's idea of only fulfilling a request, only giving and being there out of joy has to be coming from, is a place where you decide, I want that so bad that I can at least reduce a majority of the difficulty in doing that. Because it really means I've got to be authentic. I've got to be really honest with me, and I got to show up 100% and be totally vulnerable. And I have to risk you. You know, that goes into our whole thing that when I did the thing for a while on love, approval, and appreciation, all the white lies that we tell for love, approval, and appreciation. That's the kind of stuff that we do. You ask me to do something, I say, okay, I don't really want to do it, but I know if I don't, you're going to be pissy, and I don't want to deal with that. So I just go ahead and do it. And then I haven't been my true self. I haven't been honest with you. You might even, okay, let's play this scenario two ways. One, let's say I put on the nice smiley face and project like it's no big deal, and I would love to do it for you, so you don't have a clue. You absolutely believe that what's going to happen is I'm joyously giving this to you. So the other thing that I've taught you is that this is something I don't mind doing at all. Chances are you might ask me again, huh? Okay, so let's go the other angle. I'm doing it for you, but I'm doing it with, okay, you know, which clearly says I don't want to do it, right? Now, this is a thing that I just love. And I watched another old movie. You know, old movies really had a lot of health in them, believe it or not. Then, because then we do this thing like, well, what's wrong? Nothing. Well, really, I can tell something's wrong. No, nothing's wrong. Just forget about it. I'll just take care of it. No, come on, talk to me, okay? No, you know, so here, you know, you've all played that game, right? You've all experienced that with somebody, right? And I don't know about you guys, I've been on both sides of the fence, okay? I've been the one that says, no, nothing's wrong. There's a glaring dagger at you. And I've been the one saying, oh, come on, tell me what's going on. Please? Really? Huh? Please? So what happens is that in either case, now we have a whole other game going on, and we're completely removed from the original thing, which is a person trying to get their need met. They've made a request. And chances are, because we do this, if you look at your actions, even just in the last, oh, I'll make it really big month, you can probably see where you've done this. You made a request of somebody, and the way you did it was to try and manipulate the yes out of them that you wanted. Yes. And that can be anything from borrowing a dollar because you're out and you don't have cash to who knows what, some really big thing. I don't know. It doesn't matter. The thing is that a lot of times we don't, it is such second nature to us. with the way we deceive ourselves and deceive others, that our communication is always coming from this dishonest, unauthentic place, where I can't allow myself to really just be transparent with you and say, yeah, I messed up. I screwed up. That isn't what I meant to do. And I apologize. And I owe you money and I need to pay that back. And we need to have this stop right now. You know, that's authentic. That's clean. But we don't want to go there because we have this belief, we've listened to the voice of the ego telling us that's the only way I can make it. That's the only way I'm going to get this need met. Or, if I don't get this need met, I'm going to die, I'm not going to make it, I'm going to live on the streets, or whatever the bull noise in our head is going on. And we've all heard it, you know, either you're going to end up on the streets, or if it's not that one, the big ones are always about money, I'm going to lose what I have, or about a relationship, I'm not going to get the love, approval, and appreciation I want from that certain special somebody, and about a lot of it is about position, is about feeling like I'm okay in the world and I fit in and people respect me and like me. And those three things, the ego will always go back to those three things and pull on those. And again, I would like to tell you that no matter how much you control any of that, you may even have a whole week or a whole month of feeling safe and secure. And I'll guarantee you that that little safety rug or little security rug is going to get ripped right out from underneath you. Somehow, some way. And you won't be feeling safe and secure. So then you'll devise another way to try and come up with that sense of security. And it'll all be about control and manipulation. It'll all be about fighting this energy and trying to create in the other person to get them to do what you need them to do. Or that you are going to always, you've just decided, well, if I don't go along with her, I'm going to have somebody screaming at me and mad as hell at me. Or if I don't go along with him, he's going to leave, he won't love me, he won't care about me. So that what happens is that we even don't know who our authentic self is to us. We're not just hiding it from our friends and loved ones. We've hidden it so well from ourselves, we don't know who that is. Because you have to get really, really clear what you like, what you don't like, what your values are, and are those values, you know, good today and up for sale tomorrow? We talked about the prostitute archetype. You know, compromising those parts of ourselves in order to get that illusion of safety and security. And we do that. Everybody does it. Everybody has that archetype. We move into the light side of that archetype and we get the guardian of faith, because that's having absolute faith that I will not compromise any part of myself, and regardless of what is happening or what I'm perceiving in the world, I know that I will be okay. I know that I am okay in this moment. So it's shifting into that. If I am unable to tell somebody no, or be honest with them about my concerns about something because of my concern or fear of their reaction, then what kind of emotional intimacy do you think that person and you are going to have? There's not going to be any real intimacy there. There's a wall. You've just erected a wall. If I show this person the real me, they're going to go away. And the going away may not be physical. The going away may be they'll get pissed at me, they'll react, they won't want to talk to me, I'll get the cold shoulder, the silent treatment, you know, or the wall of anger. So what I would invite you to do is to take a look at what are those things that scare you in your life. What are those things that frighten you? So that in looking at what those are, then the next thing to do with that list is to look at what do I do to try and prevent those things from happening. And take a look at what you do. Take a look at also the noise in your head. How your mind chatters at you about you better do this, you better not do that, you better do, you know, better look this way, better look, you know, whatever. I mean, it's endless. It's endless what the ego throws at us. And the thing is that none of us have ever learned how to question those thoughts, let alone the fact that those thoughts are not who I am. Most people, when they first hear that, it's real confusing to them. It's like, what do you mean my thoughts aren't me? They're up here. I hear them all day long. They're me. And we recognize a lot of those thoughts as the values and the rules and the traditions we got taught by our family of origins. Correct? I mean, a lot of it is stuff we got from them that we watched growing up, that we got taught maybe if we were brought into a religion and raised in a particular religion. You know, so you got taught those rules as well and what was good and bad and right and wrong. And it wasn't okay to question. If you questioned, you were like, in China what they do is they top the poppy. And what that means is, in the poppy fields, when the poppies are growing, any of them that get too tall above the majority get lopped off so that it stays at a nice, perfect level. And a lot of what even those of us that you know, act out and rebel and break rules, I really had to look at, even though I was rebelling a lot to a lot of things, even in my rebellion, I was conforming. I was just joining a different group, and I was conforming to their parameters, to their ideas of what were right and wrong and good and bad. It just went against the majority, but I got to fit in over here. And so it took me a long time to really sort out and figure out who really was I. If I didn't do this rebellion stuff over here and fight against that, and I knew I didn't really fit in with the majority over here, who was I? What did I believe? What were my values? What were the things that were important to me? And then I had to take a look at how important were they? Because when push came to shove, did I let go of them? Did I prostitute myself? Did I go along with what somebody else wanted because I didn't want them pissed off at me or I was afraid I might lose something? So I let that value kind of sit in the back seat. You know, that's what that is. We don't have to sell our bodies for sex to be in the shadow side of the prostitute archetype. The other piece to the restlessness and the urgency is most of you, I think, know, and I've talked about it in here, that not only the Mayan calendar, but a whole lot of other indigenous peoples, prophets, have told them that winter solstice of 2012, the world is going to end as we know it. Well, of course, white Western culture, left brain thinking people ran around and went, ah! Asteroids are going to hit us and we're going to, you know, fall off the planet or some crazy ass thing. And, you know, that's not what it means. You know, what it means is that we are getting pushed to shift our consciousness. We're getting pushed to move up out of operating out of just the first three chakras. The first three chakras, first, second, and third. First is our relationship to the tribe, going along with the tribe, saying yes to all the rules, or fighting against the rules because we've joined a different tribe that says these are the rules, and we don't like those guys because they're the status quo. So that's the tribal stuff. Second chakra is my relationship to individual people, the power that goes on between me and each person in my life. Okay? And that even includes the clerk down at Fred Meyer's. So it's not, obviously it shows up in that most powerful of relationships, the committed romantic monogamous one. That one holds a lot of power. But it also means all the other relationships we're in. Where's that balance of power? And then third chakra is my relationship to myself. What I think of me, my self-esteem. And if you think about it, those three domains are the domains of the ego. The ego is going to pull from those three things to stir up our insecurity, our lack of safety, our belief that, oh gosh, I'm not good enough, they don't like me, they don't approve of me, they don't accept me. I mean, you guys can add to that list, I'm sure. I mean, we could go on for another hour just writing those lists. We have to move up out of the first three chakras because we are evolving. And if you look at history, even just in written history as far back as it goes, that's all been within this 26,000 year period. But even within that time frame, we have evolved. We have changed. Our bodies have evolved physically. We have become different. The way our brains work is different. What we know, what we've learned, our abilities have increased and changed. And what we're getting called to do now is move up into a different realm, a different level of consciousness, to be able to come to a place where I no longer operate from down here. I no longer operate from what my tribe thinks, what my individual people in my life think, nor even what my ego thinks. That my self-esteem no longer even is requires any kind of specific thing to feel okay. It's like that becomes non-existent. And that's what I believe we're shifting out of. And that's what I also believe we're moving into in terms of the whole 2012 thing, is that we are really getting called to do something different. I think we're also seeing it on a physical level. Anything that we think about generates a feeling. Would you agree? Even if it's a lightweight emotion. So lightweight to way big, huge, right? Okay. If that's true, and the Institute of Heart Math has proven that anything we feel emotionally, we send out a field, a bioelectromagnetic field that sends out, that they are now measuring in miles, one human being. Now that would be a big, gigantic emotion. Probably a little one doesn't go for miles. Huge. So if by what I think I stir up an emotion, and let's say it's a powerful emotion, and that emotion is emanating from me, even when I don't know it, I'm not conscious of it, let's say I'm totally unconscious, I'm totally reacting out of first and second chakra over some stuff. Well, it doesn't mean that that still isn't happening. That energy still isn't moving out from me, and that there isn't a whole lot of stuff being created as a result. Because remember what we talked about earlier? That we are a projector. Each of us is a projector. And what we experience in the world is the projected. How we do that, how we manifest our reality, is based on what I'm thinking and the emotion that goes out there, because it's the feeling that creates it. So thank God, because, you know, I have bizarre thoughts all the time. I just do. I'll own it. I don't know about you guys, but yeah, I come up with the strangest stuff. So what'll happen is it gets dismissed and there's no emotion to it. It's just like, oh man, that was weird. And there's no emotion to it. Thank God, because if I was creating from that, I would be in really deep doo-doo, okay? Really simply. So It's the emotion that gets generated. So think about the things that you spend a lot of time thinking about. And chances are, it's stuff that comes out of the first three chakras. It's either about some group you're a part of. If you're in a 12-step group, that's a tribe. So it doesn't just have to be your family of origin. And then when we become adults and we create a new family, that becomes another tribe. When we go to school, that's a tribe. If we go to a religion, an organized religion and its practices, that's a tribe. If we have a hobby or an interest and we've joined a group or a club to do that kind of thing, that's a tribe. Anything where you come together with a purpose and you have kind of a language and a set of rules that go with that. So even your job, whatever your job is, think about the training that you went through, the education it took. You get together with those people that do the same job, and you're speaking a different language. Okay? So that becomes its own tribe. And second chakra, take a look at the power struggles that happen between you and other people. And it's all about you trying to get what you want, them trying to get what they want. And it might be you're trying to help them get what they want, but you're trying to help them get what they want because you want them to like you. You want them to be happy. You want them to stay. So you're still going after something. It's not altruistic at all. So, in looking at urgency and restlessness, if you find that you hear stuff on the news, the weather stuff, the political stuff, every time I talk to people, see, I haven't watched or listened or read to any media in 5 years. But trust me, I don't miss out on much because everybody needs to talk about what they get blasted at them. It's amazing to me. And I'll just say, no, I don't read the news. No, I didn't read that in the paper. I didn't really want to know about that. Don't need to. Because is there anything I can do about it? I can't do anything about the hurricane that went up the East Coast. I can, if I choose to, send some money to Red Cross. I do that and let it go. But I know people that will leave the news channels on and watch the drama of that stuff every chance they have to be plugged in. Whether it's that, whether it's the downfall of some big political figure or religious figure. But see, all of those are old traditions, and those are all going to change too. So we're going to see a lot of collapsing of that. It's not ever going to go back to the way it was. It's not supposed to. The urgency and the restlessness you feel is your spirit calling you, to really come into a place of surrender. That's what this is all about. Fifth chakra is all about surrender. It's about speaking your truth. It's about not shoving your truth down someone else's throat. But it's mostly about surrender. This is where we surrender self-will to divine will. And whatever that means to you, don't let someone else decide for you what that is. That's giving up responsibility. That's going along with a tribe. And just saying, okay, I got to believe this because this is just the way it is. Because that's just how I believe. And if that's what you're doing, then you're staying stuck down in the first three chakras. You're not moving up. Sixth chakra is about being able to seek the truth. And seeking your truth. So be willing to question. Be willing to look around and go, okay, this can get pretty overwhelming. And it can. So that's why I suggest turn off the news, stop reading the paper, Stop reading the news on the internet. You know, just stop. When the news comes on the radio, turn it off. Put a CD in. Listen to some music. Treat your spirit with a little gentleness. And then ask yourself, what do I believe about this stuff? And what is it that I might be being called to do? Maybe there's nothing I can do for the starving people in Somalia, but I can maybe send some money. So maybe my responsibility is not just sending it to anybody, finding out what is the most responsible organization that will actually spend the money on food and get it there. Because trust me, a lot of them don't. And if you decide, nope, that's not the route I can go, I don't have that, maybe there's something else you can do, because we've got starvation going on right here in Clark County. So it might be you didn't grow a garden. Maybe you know somebody that did grow a garden and they've got excess. Ask them, can you come pick some of that stuff to take it to the food bank? They might be doing something like that. I don't know what it is. You find out what it is for you. Find out what that service is for you. It could be anything. Anything that helps another person. But that's what's going to start moving you up into the heart chakra. This is where... So, I got to drop out of my head, but I also got to come up from here and get in the center here, where I can listen to my spirit. And to me, that's intuition. That's where I hear that. And I can't do that when I'm flipping out and getting all irritated and pissy, not greeting people that come through the door like I normally do, but I'm growling under my breath, because that's what I was doing. And as long as I stayed there, I was not able to even think of what was the next thing to do. I was just going to shut the whole thing down. And that's just a small example. Obviously, we all have examples of that we can think of, and it's usually the littler irritations. The big ones I've really gotten a good handle on. For some reason, I don't know what it is. The big ones I was able to grab onto first. I don't know what that is. It's this stuff that will just light the match, and there the fuse goes, and just take cover. I'm getting better, though. I'm laughing at it, and like I said, I don't beat myself up for it. It's just, you know, this became my teacher tonight. Anything that has me look at what my reaction is, where I'm judging, attaching, and resisting, is a teacher for me. So it might be a person, usually is. It might be a thing, and it might be a situation. But if you can step back and look at, this is a teacher for me right now. What do I have the opportunity to learn? What happens is that I get really excited now. And it helps. It helps to bank it down. Now, I still might not get a handle on it enough right away to take it through the questions or to drop the judgment and the resistance and the attachment. But it starts moving me in that direction. And it starts shifting all that powerful emotion I was putting out. The emotion I was putting out with that thing, I'm surprised it didn't blow up all by itself. You know, that's what I was headed towards creating, I'm sure. So, there you are. What I want to do now is open it up to questions and comments. So, anybody got any questions or comments? I know, it always takes a few minutes. So y'all think about it. Yeah, thank you, Jake.
You're on all day. When you said the thing about how the big ones, you were easier for you to handle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, isn't the ego kind of involved in this? And so it's kind of like being sneaky, so it's going to go for the little thing. So I think you really have to look at that, because...
That's a really good observation. because what will happen is the bigger things are easier to see and easier to grab, to get a handle on, and be able to take through that process. So, yeah, and the ego is going to do everything it can to survive. It will do anything and everything. Its whole mission is to survive. Period. End of story. And it doesn't care how it does it. It could be, I am a big pile of garbage, I'm not worth crap, nobody loves me, to, I am all that and a piece of cake, and I don't understand why these people don't just absolutely bow down and kiss my toes. And everything in between. Everything in between. So, yeah. The little stuff is the stuff that it's going to jump out and grab, because that's when, at least I know for me, I least expect it, you know? Yeah. Yeah, good point. Very good point. Thank you, Bob, for getting that door open. I couldn't find the lock. Any other questions? Any questions from last week? I don't believe it. This is a first. Okay, so where should we take this? Let's take this to, if urgency and restlessness is now seen as a motivator. Is that a dragonfly? Dragonfly is the medicine of illusion. No, it's the medicine of illusion. It's a reminder to pay attention to the illusions that you are either deceiving of yourself. See if it'll go out. Good idea. Where did he land? He's waiting. Yeah, but the alarm will go off if I open it. And I don't think the pastor who I rent the space from would appreciate it. Okay. That is hysterical, actually, because the medicine of illusion that Dragonfly brings to us is to look at the illusions that we are creating either for ourselves or the web of illusion that we may be creating for others, or that we may be under an illusion created by someone else. So, okay. Back. Yeah, and it's almost looking like he's trying to get into those little holes in the tile. Ow, ow, ow.
So, in regards to judging, attaching, and resisting, let's start with judging. Let's say that I notice that I'm judging in one of the tribes I belong to.
Mm-hmm.
It's because of my need for attention or belonging or whatever. How does a person work at letting go of that?
Well, for one of the things is you take the judgment that you're having,
mm-hmm.
and you take it through the four questions. There goes. Turn off the
light.
Poor Aiden. Either that or use the basket and catch it.
Yeah.
We don't want him to die.
Yeah, I don't want him to die.
So you take whatever your judgment is, and like, let's say, give me a one of the judgments that you're having, just a real simple statement.
Okay, I'm in a 12-step meeting group. It's my home group. Not a newcomer one.
Right, but give me a simple judgment. Yep. Don't go into a lot of story.
I don't have enough free time, so guys will yell at me.
Oh, okay. So they don't like me because I don't have enough clean time. Okay. So the judgment that there's a pecking order and a judgment that they're judging you, right? Oh, man. She has to keep coming back. That's all there is to it. Meredith, you're hired. Not that I make any money with this thing, but I'll figure out something. So what you would do is that you would take that judgment through the four questions. And, you know, I don't want to do it right now because it would be too quick. And what you want to do, as I've taught you before, is you want to sit with each one of those. But you take that judgment. They're judging me because I don't have enough clean time. Is that true? Do I absolutely know that that's true? And you don't answer from left brain. And how do I feel when I have that thought, which begins to separate me from my thinking? In other words, recognition of, this is a thought I'm having. Oh gosh, maybe it's the voice of the ego. This isn't me, this is the ego. Right, so, and it's wanting to get attention and power and all the stuff the ego likes. So how do I feel when I have that thought? Where am I feeling it in my physical body? What's the sensation? How do I treat others when I have that thought? How do I treat myself when I have that thought?
What I've done in the past with doing family of origin stuff, what I've learned in the past, was it's my, you know, a lot of that's my wounded inner child stuff. And I've learned got some tools on reparenting my wounded inner child. So what I've done, what I've learned to do was to recognize that and then have like an inner dialogue with my healthy adult, with my wounded inner child. And
well, if you've healed the wounds, it's not a wounded inner child anymore.
Well,
shouldn't be.
But I'm reassuring that part of me that's feeling insecure and scared.
Okay.
The other part of me that you're safe, I'm taking care.
Okay, you're using different language.
Right.
Okay, because
that's
to me,
which I used to be taught when I was doing a lot of this work.
Right, exactly, because that's what they used. And what I really believe and what I've taught in here is that most, if not all of Western psychology, and most of what we've gotten out of 12-step stuff has been, thank God we've had it. I'm not putting it down. Thank God we've had it. All of it kept me from being totally, you know, dead, really. So, but it really was just nothing more than a way to manage the ego.
So you're telling me that the process of self-care is evolving to something new, which you're teaching us now?
Yes.
And so
it's evolved.
That information is no longer valid?
Not for me it is. Not anymore. And I've had people call me and want to do their abuse histories and debriefing, and I tell them, you have to find somebody else. I don't do those anymore. Because it really feels like what we're doing when we do that, what I've experienced at this point, is that is a way to manage the ego, but it doesn't do anything about teaching us how to, and it's not like we want to get rid of the ego, so it's not about learning how to get rid of it, because that's resistance, right? And so people say, okay, well then how do I get rid of my ego if I'm not supposed to resist it? Well, you don't resist it and you don't try to get rid of it. Get into present moment. It doesn't exist. Ego cannot exist in present moment.
Is that still ego management?
No. Not if you learn how to stay in present moment.
Well,
ego does not exist in present moment. And if I'm in there, I'm coming from heart center.
So for me, going back to my question, it's been a challenge
for me to look at reprogramming my thinking so I'm addressing that part of me that's trying to be in control, the ego.
Yeah.
You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's very challenging.
Well, it's challenging because the ego is going, yeah, we don't want you to go there.
Mm-hmm.
Byron Katie, Eckhart Tolle, Don Miguel Ruiz, you know, any of those. I mean, I've got probably 20 authors, 20 teachers on my website that teach this stuff.
Well, I'm halfway through Eckhart Tolle, but it's so trying to change. It's 60 years old, and that's just me. It's 60 years of doing this stuff. It's challenging to completely rethink my process.
Yeah, and as long as you believe that it's going to be hard, it will be hard. So that's what I want to present to you, because that's a key that if you turn that, Bob, I swear to God to you, it will shift.
I don't disbelieve you, Karen.
I mean, it's huge what can happen.
Well, that's something I would like. I'm working at that.
So maybe one of the first things you might take through the questions and the turnarounds would be, at 60 years old, it's too hard to completely grab onto new radical concepts that fly in the face of everything I've been learning for 25 years.
Well, it's a process of reprogramming, because I'm a human being, and my mind has a certain is used to a certain way of thinking. And so I'm trying to develop a new way of thinking, and I can't just snap my finger and do that overnight.
Well, no, it's not going to be overnight. No, it's anything is going to be practice.
It's
right.
A process like any other.
John?
Well, it's not so much as a question. Like, the ego doesn't exist in the present moment. There's nothing to worry about. There's nothing to do. There's nothing to be concerned about right now. It's like when a thought of judgment comes up, I think, okay, well, is it happening right now? Am I? Is something happening to me right now? And even if there is some outside thing apparently or like seemingly happening to me, then the question is, well, how am I responding to this?
Well, and the response, too, comes from how am I perceiving it? Because I have to perceive it to then react to it. And to me, there's a difference between the reacting and responding. I can respond from my heart center. But when I'm coming from ego and these three bottom chakras, what's happening is I've got this knee-jerk reaction that's going on all the time. And so a lot of it is just practicing the awareness, right? Aiden, you had a question.
Yeah. So what I've learned is through perception, I change my perception of things, and normally it gets better. But what my question is when I'm thinking about ego, I'm thinking about regression and suppressing it. And if you keep on suppressing it, won't it just come back up and keep on
suppressing it? Oh, yeah, suppression is just another way to resist.
And then once one of those thoughts that, like, come up that make you feel really gross and icky and insecure and all that kind
of
stuff.
Uh-huh. Got lots
like,
of those.
You just sit with it, and you're just like...
Yeah. One of the things that I do with people, is I take them through the four questions so they can begin to learn how to separate their thinking self, their ego, from their true self, which is this pure awareness that we are.
That's what I think about.
Yeah, and you could call it that, except that it's so much more simpler. You know, lots and lots of therapy, and it's a real simple tool. That part of why I like it is it's easy, it's simple, and it can be taught so that a person can go use it. But I think part of it with that would be also the point that you made that I want to stress is it's not about not having feelings. It's like when I talked about dealing with grief and death in here, you know, and even working with a mother that lost her 2-year-old child to cancer. It's like the way we treat grief and all that stuff, well, no wonder we get stuck in it for years, because we're not really doing it. We're not really grieving. We're caught up in the drama of what goes on up here, and we're listening to all the thoughts, which produce a ton of pain, but it's not the original hurt, which is the loss of the person, right? So what I did with her is we just went in. I just had her go in. I said, where in your body are you feeling the pain? Get out of your head. Quit listening to the thoughts. And we had taken a couple of thoughts through the questions and the turnarounds. And she was ready to do that. And she said, well, I'm feeling it right here in my heart. I said, close your eyes. Go in and be with it. Sit with it. And allow whatever expression there is for it to come up. She also has told me that the crying she did around that was completely different than the way she cried when she was all up in her head. They're saying, well, you must not have really cared. You must not have really loved him. What do you mean you're done grieving? And she's celebrating the fact that she got to have this beautiful little spirit in her life for 2 years. That's where she has shifted to. But everybody else is still all up in their head. They haven't even begun to really do the real grief. They're doing all the drama that this causes. So that was a good point you brought up. Thank you. Because that's a real important part of that process, is to go in and just be with it. Just sit with it. Yeah, you don't want to suppress it. You don't want to repress it. That's all resistance. And if you resist it, it's just going to persist. I mean, they've proven that quantum physically and physics on every level, macrocosmically as well as microcosmically. You resist something, and it will come back at you with equal force. It will match. And that's anything. It wasn't until I stopped resisting being what in my mind and my belief was fat and unattractive that went away. And without really any effort, I've lost over 50 pounds. But that happened as a result of letting go of what was supposed to be. Having an attachment, resisting what I believed was the way things were supposed to be, the judgment I had about myself, the assumptions I made that other people were judging me, all that garbage. Yeah. So, okay. One more question? One more comment? One more anything? Okay. Let's go ahead and close then. I want to close with another version. I usually close with a version of the Lord's Prayer that is a direct translation from Aramaic to present-day English rather than through all the routes that totally changed it. And there's actually several versions that are really close, but a little bit different wording here and there, and I think they're beautiful. And I have just really come to enjoy reading them. This one is, O Birther, Father, Mother of the Cosmos, focus your light within us and make it useful. Create your reign of unity now through our fiery hearts and our willing hands. Help us love beyond our ideals and sprout acts of compassion for all creatures. Animate the earth within us. We then feel the wisdom underneath supporting all. Untangle the knots within so that we can mend our hearts, simple ties to each other. Don't let surface things delude us, but free us from what holds us back from our true purpose. Out of you, the astonishing fire, returning light and sound to the cosmos. Aho. Thank you very much. I appreciate so much you guys being here, because I teach